Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 136 of Season 8 of Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again this season is Heather of Word of Hellmouth. Welcome back to the show, Heather.
Hello, Rob. Thank you for having me back on. It's been a moon.
It's always fun. Always fun having you on. So thank you. Thank you for making the time to come back this year.
Of course, for Saving Private Ryan. Absolutely. I'm here.
Okay. Well, actually, why don't we start there? What's your history with the movie? Do you remember when you first saw it?
Yeah.
Is it something that you revisit often? You know, things like that.
I think I was a junior in high school when this came out. My family's, particularly on my dad's side, their thing is, military movies, they're history buffs. Most of them, they're a strong military family in general. Cops and military on my dad's side. So this was a no-brainer, as I already was a Steven Spielberg fan, and my brother and I had to see this. We did want to see it in the theater, but I don't think we made it to the theater on this one, and I usually remember. But I do remember the first time watching it, just not where we were at. And I don't think even today, and there's only a few movies I can really say this with authority about, I cannot remember having an experience like this watching a movie for the first time, because it doesn't feel like you're watching a movie. And I know that's intentional, but the emotional bandwidth that you have to sit through it is extraordinary. And it's been a really long time since I've watched it from start to finish with intention. And I did start last week, and I think I made it through like the first half of it, but I was really, really sick and I fell asleep. But it's a brutal watch. It's so intense, so emotional. You go through a gauntlet of experiences that aren't your own. If this movie doesn't teach you some form of empathy, I don't really know that you have any in your body, essentially. It's an incredible feat. It is a cinematic masterpiece, and I do not throw that term around at all. But the only reason I don't go back and watch it more is because it's so, so difficult. Even just watching in clips, I was telling you before the show, I'm like, yeah, I've watched them a couple times over, and I was getting really, really emotional and worked up just rewatching the small clips. It's a lot. And this is what people go through. And I don't think that, you know, civilians like us sitting on our tushies have any real true understanding of it. And if there's a way for us to grasp or at least have some form of empathy for it, I feel like this is maybe the movie to sit down and watch.
That's amazing. It's amazing. Is it the type of movie you recommend to people to watch, or you don't, because it's so brutal and everything, like, and that it really grabs you?
Yeah. Specifically, if as far as wartime movies go, this will come up, I know, at some other point, but this is the apex. If you want to know what war is like and you want some form of realism, this is the experience to have. And I don't think there's anything close to it. And I love war movies, which we will probably get into later also. But this is on an island all on its own. So, but you've got to warn them ahead of time. It's long and it feels long and it's supposed to. And you're not going to be the same.
I don't know if I agree with that last
I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean that in a bad way. It feels like even the short, small moments feel long, which I think is impressive, because each scene and each little moment is so intentional, and there's something to be grasped from all of it. Visually, emotionally, dialogue, plot-wise, all of it. There's just so much constantly going on to eat up and gain from it, but it's a lot. This is the one ring. Keep it secret, keep it safe.
Okay. I mean, I've already talked as of now, I've talked close to I'm honing in on the 80 hours of talking about this movie, and you know, we still have another 30 episodes to the season, so you know.
It's a long one.
This is by far going to surpass the. I mean, it's a before this, It's a Wonderful Life was the longest that I spoke about a movie, and that was 81 hours. But you know, there's no way this movie will not topple that. And you see, I'm giving hints to Jay for him to guess at the end. You know how many hours I talked about them, and you know. But in this movie's defense, the episodes are usually shorter. You know, they're not as short as the Great Escape episodes, but they are shorter than almost all of the other ones that I've done so far. Who knows, that might change over the next 30 episodes. Yeah, so we'll have to wait and see.
It could also depend on your guests and if they can, you know, not be long-winded.
No, it's not a question of being long-winded or not. It's a question of, question of how much you actually have to talk about. You know, there is that, too.
Yeah.
Because,
well, like our first scene today, there's not much dialogue there, but there is
one line of dialogue.
Amount of action.
There's one line of dialogue, but there's a hell of a lot that goes on.
Yep. Well, we are at a big point. By the way, thank you for giving me this scene.
That's what you asked for. That's where you got it.
I was like, I knew that I might not get it, and I was okay with that. That's
summer when we talked about this, you were really excited, but you were very upset about the fact that you had to wait until now to talk about it. That was that's what I remember. You were like, what, I have to wait 10 months for us to, or 9 months for us to talk about this? But you know,
but also it was a really good excuse to rewatch the movie, and it's probably been a good 10 years. If I had to guess, maybe a little bit less. I'm trying to think. Like the last couple of weeks, I've realized this last 10 years has gone by really, really fast. Which, I mean, that's what happens as we get older. Time goes by quicker. But I think it's since I've sat down again from beginning to end and not picked it up like halfway through or something like that. From sat down beginning to end to watch, it's probably been close to 10 years. So I was excited to watch it again. Okay. Yeah,
and I'm excited to talk to you about it. Okay, so minute 136 begins with Upham taking cover. And ends with Miller trying to stop Ryan. So we ended things on Friday with Upham taking a little stroll out onto the veranda, or however you want to call it. He goes out onto the balcony, and immediately they start shooting at him. And this minute begins with him basically jumping back inside this apartment, this room, and you know we see all of. Things just flying all around him, shattered glass, and probably parts of you know the stone in the building and stuff like that from all being shot at. Now the first thing that jumped out at me when I was watching this, within a second you see it, and you can see that on the wall, as Upham is running by it, there's tons of like it looks like blood splotches of blood. Which makes you wonder.
Yeah, they're splattered. That's right.
Makes you wonder what happened here. You know, what happened in this apartment that there's all this blood on the wall, or is it, you know, a goof in the movie that it's something that you know was partially from a later scene in this movie about something that happens in this room.
Oh, I know what you might be referring to, but I don't know. I don't know because I mean, look, the area that they're in, it's all it. They haven't just destroyed it. It was destroyed when they got there.
Well, again, we don't know. So we've talked about this a lot. We don't know who destroyed Rommel. We don't know if it was the Germans who bombed it or the Allies. Could have been either, but again, it doesn't really matter. This place was devastated.
Yeah, we don't know the circumstances. The place is devastated. So it's potentially from something that happened before, or maybe like you said, maybe it was a whoopsie. A little bit later, but yeah, I think it was probably intentional. I mean, it catches your eye; you don't miss it. You saw it, and I saw it right away.
It also looks fresh.
In my first watch, I did.
You see, the thing that bothers me about it is that it looks fresh. You know, so it can't necessarily.
Yes. It's bright red.
It can't necessarily be something that you know when they took over Rommel 2 days ago or whatever it was. You know, you'd think that it would already start to fade. It wouldn't be as red as we can see it here.
You know what? You're right. I'm playing it back right now. If you just go through it the first time and it just passes by, you won't notice it being that bright red. But it not only looks bright red, but it still looks a little bit lubricated.
That's right.
It looks a little wet.
Exactly.
Yeah, so maybe something happened very recently up there, or maybe it was a
week. Yeah, I don't know. That, again, it doesn't really matter. The truth is I've never noticed this before. That's one of the things I love about doing movies minute by minute. You know, you don't pay attention to these little things watching it regularly. And here we go. Get blood on the wall. Watches on the wall.
This is how you become an expert.
Isn't that the point? Isn't that what we're trying to do here?
Exactly. Exactly. So if you happen to run into Steven Spielberg, because I know that that is a thing that just might regularly happen for people like us, then you could ask him that
yes,
question.
Yes, of course.
And I bet he'd be super excited to answer and knew exactly what you or I were talking about.
He'd be like, I never noticed that.
Or maybe not even respond to us at all.
he'll give us the William Shatner response from Saturday Night Live. It's just a movie. Get a life.
No, this is my life. And it's their fault. They're the one who made it so exceptionally
right.
well. I blame Spielberg.
You can always blame Spielberg. You know, you can blame him for making such a spectacular movie. That's the blame. The blame.
Yes.
It's all on him.
Yep.
So Upham runs past this blood and just leaves the apartment. You know, he completely ignores the fact that Mellish and Henderson are there. I mean, they did tell him that they need him to go get, more ammo. But still, you know, he doesn't even say goodbye. He just runs out.
No, I think that's one of the things so much. And this sequence and the following ones and ones that happened prior to this, too. I think one of the reasons that this is so, so tense is because of the chaos.
Right.
I think, and throughout the rest of the movie as well, but particularly here, you get to see the chaos. Like, there are so many moments, and there are ones that will come up to where you go, wait a minute, is that one of our guys? Is it? And you have to wonder, is that what it's really like when you're out there in it? Like, how often, I mean, there's a lot of friendly fire that happens too.
Yeah.
And it's not talked about a lot, but it's a pretty regular occurrence for friendly fire to happen. There was a good percentage of friendly fire deaths that happen in wartime. And you have to wonder in circumstances like these how devastating that has to be.
For sure. No question about that. I mean, in this movie, I don't think we see any instances of friendly fire that we can know about for sure.
No.
You know, there might be some close calls.
No, but it shows that chaos, and that's the thing. And you can understand the environment that they're in, how that would happen so easily.
Yeah.
And like you said, just not even the lack of communication right there, him just running off and not telling them he's leaving, just like small things like that, those set you up with those potential
Correct.
Possibilities.
And then we get a great shot through this big hole in the wall, you know, where they're using that to shoot out of. And, you know, we see the destruction, we see the chaos, everything around them, you know, as they're just sitting there waiting for someone to show up. And then we see the shot changes, and now we get another shot of the tank that's struggling because, last week we had the two soldiers that blew up the tread, you know, with the sticky bombs. So we see slowly, it's still trying to move along, but it's not really able to do so. And then it just comes to a halt. And then the shot changes again, and we see Upham, you know, coming down the stairs. And not even thinking, he just goes out and exposes himself, in the quad there. And they just start shooting at him again. And, you know, he quickly gets himself back, under some cover. Now, the thing I find a little strange is that, Are they trying to tell us that in these last few moments, Upham has now become more of a combatant soldier? You know, that he knows that he's supposed to, that this is what he's supposed to do. I mean, this is a guy who barely had any training. You know, and you see that what he does goes along with training. Maybe it's the idea of something that he might have been taught and just never had to use, and now it's muscle memory that's helping him to remember, okay, wait a second, they're shooting at me, let me get behind this door. Or, again, maybe he saw it from everyone else around him, the way that they're acting, you know, that that helps also. Could be either.
I agree. I mean, the whole intention and purpose of military training is exactly what you said. A lot of it, the repetition is for that muscle memory. It is intentional that way. So if they are in circumstances like this, which many often are eventually, then if your brain doesn't have time to think, you're going to react. And that's when that muscle memory actually comes into play. Right. Also, I mean, there's also human instinct there too. He may not see the tank coming, but he had to have heard it. He might not have known exactly where its location was either. He has a job to do. He has to run and do it. And that's what he was focused on. But yeah, maybe it was either or, maybe it was a combination of both, but there's a level of instinct too. But man, can you imagine coming around that corner and just,
right,
you see a tank,
completely.
A tank that has been brutalized already. And I love that shot of the tank rolling up to him too, because all you do see is the busted up treads, but you still hear that cranking and that clicking sound, which is just, to me, the sound of doom. And it just builds that tension, because you know, even if it can't move fast and it gets stuck or it has to stop, they still have that turret and they can blow you to smithereens. Right. It's just, yeah, it's a monster.
Well, again, we've seen last week, and we've seen numerous times. I mean, the amount of ground that is, you know, gravel and sand, that everything gets moved because, you know, this tank is getting closer and stuff like that. It just, you know, those little things are there to show us, you know, how intense everything is that's going on right here, you know. And there's also the fact that you know, I mean, this movie did win, you know, 2 Oscars for sound. They knew how to do that.
Oh yeah.
You know, they knew how to make sure that we all know, you know, where this sound is coming from. You know.
Well, and too, this part exactly, in his character in particular, you pointed out too that he is just a guy who, this is not where he wants to be. So many of the people that are in this war didn't have a choice to be in this war. And we see so many movies where we see war heroes and guys who like rise to the occasion. And I love those movies too. Don't get me wrong. They're great. But that is not reality. Reality is you have a bunch of regular kids out there, because yes, most military are like 18, 19 year old kids. And I mean, I think about it. My brother served in the Marines, and he was over in Baghdad, and then he was in Fallujah. And now I look back and I'm like, he was a baby. And it's really, really hard for me. It's hard for me in a different way now to think about it than at the time, where I felt like we're grown adults and et cetera, et cetera. But putting it in this kind of perspective, you didn't have a choice. So many of these people are there, and what are they going to do in these extraordinary circumstances? And I think his character, which I know a lot of people are not fond of, he's still just a human, and he's acting like a human.
Right. Yeah. He is not my favorite character. That's for sure. But
agreed. Agreed. Yeah. Agreed.
My favorite character is Ryben.
Oh, good call.
He's you know, if I was able to interview any cast member, it would definitely be him. Ed Burns is the one I would want to interview if I could.
He's so good in this. I think this is the movie too where I mean, I was aware, especially if you're, you know, you watched a lot of movies in the late 90s, you are aware of Ed Burns. But right. But this is the movie where I was like, he's really, really great. And I still think it's probably his best performance ever. He's phenomenal in it.
It's his best action performance, I guess you can say, because, you know, he's more, most of his movies are romances.
Yeah, which is why, yeah, I'm not as well versed in them, because that's not necessarily
okay. That's fine. Yeah. I mean,
doesn't mean they're not good, or his performances aren't good, but the ones that I've experienced and enjoy, I would put this one at the top for me.
Okay. All right. I completely understand. That makes a lot of sense. And then Upham continues to do things that we don't expect him to do, because he then looks and then runs across the quad, you know, ducking and skipping and hopping and, you know, doing
hoping
all the things that you're supposed to do in order to zigzag as all of the bullets are zipping around him and stuff like that. Again, great sound, sound effects, sound design, all that. Just in this little bit, where he's running across, you feel you can hear the sounds of the danger and how close they come to him.
Yes. It's almost like a character all of its own. I always say in Tarantino movies, the violence itself is actually a character all of its own. I absolutely feel that's like fair. In this movie, the sound absolutely is. The crackles, just the crackling. Ah! Right.
It's true. It's true. And then the shot changes and we see the two guys that we saw a few weeks ago filling up their Molotov cocktails. They light them up. And we see there's an open half track walking by and or riding by, and they throw it right into the I guess you can call it the cockpit, where there are three guys standing there, and you just see these guys just get completely engulfed in flames. Great stunt work, obviously, because you see them all run out to try to get out of there with as they're burning the whole way through.
And it also shows, how well guerrilla tactics work even in these scenarios and how effective they can be. I mean, those are Molotov cocktails. They're freaking, anybody could go make them. Maybe not as well, that's right. But
it's true.
But yeah, and also how arbitrary, it could be. Those guys, they might have been smart, good soldiers in that track, and they got unlucky with where they were at.
They left themselves too exposed. Yeah. It's the JFK effect.
Yes.
Don't drive around in a convertible.
Not if you're a president, not in wartime.
That's right. And then the shot changes again. We get the bird's eye view from Jackson looking down. He sees the tank that's stranded there. He's dealing with his sniper rifle, and it's really, really cool because you see an explosion that happens on the right hand side while he's doing this. Now I think that this might actually be an editing error, because I think the explosion that he sees here is when they throw the Molotov cocktails in it.
You know what? You might be right.
Because of the way the explosion just the flames go up and then a lot of smoke, and then the flames are less, and that we saw just a few seconds earlier. So again, I don't care. It's a great way to look at it. There's no question about that. So it's pretty unbelievable the way that they do that. And then the everything continues a little bit. We see a whole bunch of soldiers lying on the ground dead. Presumably those are all the German soldiers, and Jackson is just trying to take them out one by one. We see him actually clip one, one of the guys that's walking by, and then the shot changes again.
I like too, in that sequence too, he looks, it's a combination, and it's a bizarre dichotomy, but he looks frantic but also calm and focused,
right?
Like you can feel the urgency in which he's firing, but also there's a steelness about him.
Correct. Again, we'll see some different things later this week with that. But yeah.
yes. But it's very, very, very interesting watching it, especially when you're going through little bits, like you said, in slow motion like this, and really, really paying attention to what they're doing.
And then the shot changes again, and we see fog and dust, and then we slowly see Miller crawling out of it, showing basically that these guys are all relatively close to one another with the with everything that's going on, because this is probably the dust that's settling from this explosion. And then that's what I
assumed anyway.
And then he Miller gets up and he's ready to continue, and then he sees that the tank is starting to move, and he goes, reversing, he's still in his fight. You know, we see the tank start to swivel around, and then Miller looks at Ryan and screams to him, "No, no!" And then he reaches his arm out to push him, and then that's where the minute ends.
Yeah. So I mean, imagine this. Okay, so we have this setting here where it's all chaos. It's all chaos. This is our visual. When they can't see, we can't see as viewers. We are as far as you can be a voyeur in a movie like this. I definitely feel like this is exactly that experience. So imagine all of that while still having to protect this guy on top of it. And his instinct is to be a soldier and fight, and you have to keep stopping him, which we see in future.
Right. Well, we'll see that. That's right. We will see that in the next few, during the course of this week, we'll see it again. And again.
So, the mental load that Miller has to carry and the amount of things that he has to be aware of in this instance is just crazy. Yeah. Just crazy. He has to protect his men. He has to think about what they're going to do strategically. Meanwhile, this whole time he's got to keep our boy safe. Also, it's just absolutely insane.
But that's why it's so much fun to watch, and even more fun to talk about. Okay. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
We both touched on the sound, which I thought was great. And a little bit more just on the visuals. It is there's a really good balance. I know that some people have issues in movies where you can't really see everything that's going on. And I feel that way with fight sequences and stuff where they try to make them look cool. But this is not that intention. The intention is to make you feel as much as possible like you are in the scene. And be able to put yourself there as not just a viewer, but I feel like the way it's shot, it feels like one of the reasons I wanted this whole block with you was because that's what it feels like. It feels like you're getting to experience it just by watching it. The way that it's shot, it's so, so intense. I'm going to continue to overuse that word. So if you are drinkers and want to do a drinking game, use intense for me for the next 5 days, because I'm going to abuse that word. But it is the best word to describe it.
There's no question about that. Cool. All right. So every Monday, we have a segment called Maestro Monday, where my guest will give their top five John Williams scores, themes, whichever you prefer to use on that. So Heather, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
This is so hard. I love John Williams. It was really difficult, but I narrowed it down, as I always do. So my number five is Empire of the Sun. It's a lot more subtle, but it's absolutely beautiful. And I have a nostalgic attachment to that movie anyway. So the second I hear it, it gets me right in the feels.
I'm actually very upset at you right now that you chose that, because I'm now going to have that tune stuck in my head for a while. I love it. I love the tune.
Good.
But
it's beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful.
I remember it was on HBO so much when I was a kid, and I watched it over and over and over.
Me too. Me too. it's so one of my favorite movies ever. I go on and on about it all the time, and so many people haven't seen it. I'm like, you need to watch this movie. It might break your heart, but it's worth it. Just watch it. It's so good. I fell in love with Christian Bale in that movie and John Malkovich. Oh my gosh, it's so good. It's so good, and so many people haven't seen it. You need to see it. Everyone needs to see it. It's great. It's great. But that's how I watched it, too. It was on HBO, and I just would watch it over and over again. I was obsessed with it. My mom thought there was something wrong with me. She's like, why are you constantly...
That's Heather, we all know there's something wrong with you, so that's fine.
There's so many things. That's the thing. There's not one. We need
I can't say I watched The Color Purple that often. I'm not a fan of that movie, and I'm definitely not a fan of the remake. I hated the remake.
I have not seen the remake. I have no interest in seeing the remake. But when I watched it on repeat all the time, I was really little. Like, I was like 5 or 6. I have no business watching that movie as much as I did. And but I was obsessed with it. So that's just the way it went. It is not on my list, however. But number four is Jaws, which I don't feel like you can make a John Williams list and not include Jaws. There isn't anybody who hears that sound and doesn't know what it's from. It's iconic. It's great. And it's effective. I love it. Number three, Jurassic Park. It's so good. It's so beautiful. I have it on vinyl. I listen to it all the time. I write to it. It gets you everywhere. It gets that soft and loveliness, and then it's powerful, and it's great. But I love JP too. So my number two, not going to surprise anyone, but it's Star Wars. A given. If I specifically had to pick one, Duel of the Fates all day long, but Star Wars across the board. And number one, Indy. My running dad, he's kind of my hero. So for years on my phone, this is back when we used to put ringtones on our phones before we all muted our phones and we had ringtones for people. His was Indiana Jones. So every time I heard it, I'm like, yeah, it's Jim, I'm gonna answer.
Very cool. All right, thank you very much for that list. Why don't you now tell everyone where they can find Heather Baxendale?
It's super easy. You guys can find me at heatherbaxendale.com. You can find my books there. I have my trilogy, The Prophecy, completed and available for purchase on there. You can find Word of Hellmouth and other podcasts that I go on there and all the stuff that I do. So check it out. My social media stuff's also on there.
All right. Very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
In my solitude, you